All right, so let's dive into this legal battle from way back in 1895. It's got a pretty dramatic nickname, the Sugar Trust Case.
Oh yeah, United States v. EC Nitco, the one that kind of set the stage for how we view antitrust law today.
Exactly. Even when you think about today's tech giants, you can see the echoes of this case.
It all comes down to the Sherman Act, you know, that law passed in 1890 to bust up monopolies and make sure companies weren't crushing the competition.
Yeah, trying to level the playing field.
This case really pushed the boundaries of the Sherman Act.
It's like they were writing the rule book for a whole new economy.
And picture this, it's 1895, the Industrial Revolution is booming, and massive corporations are popping up everywhere.
And then along comes the American Sugar Refining Company. They go and buy up 4 sugar refineries in Philadelphia.
Just like that, they've got something like 98% control over sugar production in the U.S.
Can you imagine? Almost all the sugar in the country, controlled by one company.
The government saw this as a clear violation of the Sherman Act. They figured this much control means the company can totally rig prices and wipe out any competition.
Seems like a clear monopoly, right?
Totally.
But wait, the company had a pretty slick defense up their sleeve.
Oh yeah, they did. They argued that the Sherman Act was really only meant for buying and selling stuff across state lines, you know, interstate commerce.
Yeah, and their point was that making sugar happened all within one state.
So the feds didn't have the power to touch them.
Which brings us to the heart of the case. Does the Sherman Act apply to companies that dominate manufacturing, even if they're clearly influencing the whole national market?
It's a huge question, isn't it? Where do you draw the line between making something and selling it across state lines?
And the Supreme Court decided to draw that line pretty clearly in favor of the sugar company.
They basically said manufacturing is just a stepping stone to commerce, not commerce itself.
Meaning the Sherman Act didn't apply in this case.
Here's a quote from the majority opinion. "Commerce succeeds to manufacture and is not a part of it."
Wow, talk about drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah, they built a wall between the act of making something and selling it across state lines.
But hold on, doesn't that open a massive loophole for monopolies to just pop up? Like, if you can control a whole industry by keeping everything within one state, isn't that going against the whole point of the Sherman Act?
That's a really good point, and it was the heart of the dissenting opinion written by Justice Harlan. He argued that a monopoly over something as essential as sugar, he called it a necessary of life, would definitely impact interstate commerce, even if the refining process happened within a single state.
So Harlan was looking at the bigger picture.
He was. He knew that if one company controlled all the sugar, they could mess with supply and prices across the entire country, hurting consumers and businesses in every state.
He basically said the Sherman Act should protect competition, even if the negative effects of a monopoly aren't immediately obvious.
Exactly.
Harlan was thinking long term.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is that his dissent actually foreshadowed later cases that ended up giving the government more power to regulate commerce. He was kind of ahead of his time in seeing how interconnected the economy really is and how even things that seem local can have nanonal consequences.
So even though he lost the argument in 1895, his ideas kind of planted the seed for a broader understanding of the Sherman Act down the line.
Absolutely. But in the immediate aftermath of the Sugar Press case, the Supreme Court's decision really hampered early efforts to use the Sherman Act to control these huge corporations that were emerging.
It's like they gave manufacturing monopolies a free pass for a while. And we're still grappling with the consequences of that today.
We are. It's wild to think about how this one case, with its seemingly simple distinction between manufacturing and commerce, had such long-lasting ripple effects.
It's a perfect example of how a single legal decision can have consequences that echo through history.
And it raises a lot of questions about how we regulate powerful companies in a world that's constantly changing.
Questions that we're still trying to answer today, especially when you think about the digital age and tech giants.
Absolutely.
It makes you wonder how things might have played out differently if the Supreme Court had decided the Sugar Trust case the other way.
It's a fascinating thought experiment, isn't it? Would we have fewer megacorporations? Would innovation have been stifled or encouraged? What about the role of the federal government in the economy? The Sugar Trust case, with its seemingly simple distinction between manufacturing and commerce, has had ripple effects that we still feel today.
We're back and still unpacking this Sugar Trust case. And as we've seen, it's had a pretty big impact on antitrust law even to this day.
Yeah, and it's interesting how the Supreme Court basically limited the reach of the Sherman Act with their decision, but then you've got Justice Harlan's dissenting opinion that really brings up some key points.
Yeah, from what I've read, Harlan's dissent is considered pretty insightful, even though it wasn't the prevailing opinion at the time.
Oh, absolutely.
What made it so compelling, though? What were the arguments that made it stand out?
Well, Harlan took a totally different approach to the Sherman Act than the majority did.
Okay.
He argued that if you've got a monopoly over something people really need, like sugar, it just inherently affects interstate commerce.
Interesting.
He believed that controlling the supply and price of something that basic would inevitably have an impact on the market across state lines, even if the refining itself was happening all within one state.
So he was basically looking at the overall impact on the market, not just where the product was made, right?
Exactly.
He saw the bigger picture.
Yeah, he understood that this sugar refining monopoly would end up affecting sugar prices and availability all across the country, which would ultimately hurt both consumers and businesses in different states.
Right, makes sense.
He even went so far as to say that the Sherman Act should be used to protect competition, even if you don't immediately see the negative effects of a monopoly.
So he was kind of looking ahead, thinking about the potential problems that could arise if this kind of powerful monopoly was allowed to just keep going.
He was thinking about the long game.
Would you say his view is more in line with how we think about antitrust law today?
In some ways, definitely. His dissent actually foreshadowed a lot of later cases that ended up expanding the government's power to regulate commerce.
Like which ones?
Well, take the 1942 case, Wickard Z. Filburn, for example.
Okay.
In that case, the Supreme Court ruled that even a farmer who was just growing wheat for his own use could be regulated under the Commerce Clause.
Wow, really?
The reasoning was that even something that small and seemingly localized could potentially have an effect on the national wheat market and therefore interstate commerce.
So that case basically expanded the definition of what interstate commerce actually meant.
Exactly, and it moved away from that strict separation between manufacturing and commerce that was established in the Sugar Trust case back in 1895.
So that's how we can trace this shift in thinking back to Harlan's arguments and his dissent.
It all connects.
He planted the seeds for a much broader understanding of the Sherman Act and the Commerce Clause, even if it took quite a while for those ideas to really take hold and become legal precedent.
Sometimes that's how it goes.
It's really amazing how one dissenting opinion can have such a lasting effect.
It really is.
It shows how important it is to consider different legal viewpoints and how to interpret things, even if they don't win out in the end.
Those different perspectives shape the conversation.
And speaking of challenges, the Sugar Trust case has become really relevant again in recent years, especially with the whole debate over how to regulate these tech giants.
It's true.
It feels like we're having the same kind of debate now about how antitrust laws should apply in our digital world, don't you think?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head.
It's like we're revisiting the same questions.
We are, in a lot of ways.
The same questions that came up in the Sugar Trust case.
Yeah, like what exactly commerce means, how far the government's power actually reaches, and how we even define a monopoly in today's world.
It's complex. Especially when you're looking at platforms like Facebook and Google.
Those are tough ones.
Are they involved in commerce or are they just manufacturing data? There are no easy answers.
It's a whole new landscape.
It's really fascinating how a case from 1895 can still be relevant to the issues we're facing in the 21st century.
It shows you how connected everything is.
But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's back up a bit and talk about what happened right after the Sugar Trust case?
Okay.
What happened to the company itself after the Supreme Court ruled in their favor? So we've been digging into this Sugar Trust case and all its implications.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And I'm kind of curious what happened to the company itself after their big victory at the Supreme Court.
Well, the American Sugar Refining Company, the one that later became Domino Sugar, continued to dominate the sugar market for quite a while after that, you know.
Really?
Decades.
Wow.
But the case itself didn't totally shut down all efforts to try and regulate monopolies.
So even though they won the case, it kind of sparked this bigger conversation about corporate power and the need for stricter regulation.
Exactly. It brought the issue to the forefront. The public was getting more and more worried about the influence of these giant corporations.
Yeah, I'd see how that would happen.
And this led to a push for more robust antitrust laws.
Makes sense.
In the early 1900s, Congress passed the Clayton Antitrust Act of 1914 and the Federal Trade Commission Act.
Oh yeah, those were big ones.
Those laws gave the government more tools to combat anti-competitive practices.
So it sounds like the Sugar Trust case, even though the company won in the short term, it actually ended up fueling the movement for greater government oversight of businesses.
Yeah, you could definitely argue that it backfired on them in the long run.
It's like they won the battle but lost the war.
It exposed the weaknesses of the Sherman Act, at least how it was interpreted at the time, and that forced lawmakers and legal experts to really rethink how to handle the growing power of corporations in a rapidly changing economy.
It's kind of like they inadvertently helped to strengthen the very laws that were meant to control them.
It's a bit ironic, isn't it?
When you look back at it all, it's clear that the Sugar Trust case was a real turning point in the development of antitrust law.
It was a landmark case.
It wasn't just about one company controlling sugar.
It was about a lot more than that.
It was about figuring out the relationship between the government and corporations in this new industrial era that was emerging.
That's a great way to put it.
It makes you think, what if we could go back in time and give some advice to the Supreme Court as they were working on the Sugar Trust case?
What would we tell them?
Yeah, like knowing what we know now about all the long-term consequences?
It's a good question.
I think we'd encourage them to think bigger.
To look beyond the immediate situation.
Yeah, to consider how monopolies could potentially hurt consumers and stifle innovation, even if you don't see those effects right away.
We'd probably also remind them that the Sherman Act was created as a powerful tool to protect competition, not to help companies that were trying to take over entire industries.
And we definitely stress how connected the economy is.
That's important.
How things that happen in one state can have huge ripple effects across state lines, like Justice Harlan argued in his dissent.
He really understood that.
Monopolies, especially when they're over something essential like food or sugar, they can impact the whole market.
Absolutely.
Those are all really important points.
There are.
And they're especially relevant today as we're trying to figure out how to regulate these massive tech companies.
But it's like history repeating itself in a way.
We're still wrestling with the same basic questions about what counts as commerce in our digital world, how much power the government really has, and how to even define what a monopoly is in this rapidly changing technological landscape.
It's true. The Sugar Trust case is like this echo from the past.
It shows how these legal precedents, even ones from over 100 years ago, are still shaping how we deal with these complicated issues.
They provide a framework for thinking about these challenges.
It highlights how important critical thinking is, looking at different viewpoints and understanding the historical context as we try to navigate the ever-changing relationship between the government, businesses, and technology.
It's all connected.
Well, I think we've done a pretty thorough job of exploring the Sugar Trust case and its legacy.
I think so.
It's really a fascinating example of how a single legal decision can have consequences that ripple out way beyond the specific case itself.
Absolutely, and it's a story that's still unfolding.
The next time you hear discussion about antitrust law or the influence of corporations, think back to the Sugar Trust case.
It's a great reminder.
It shows that these questions have been around for a long time, and the choices we make today will have a big impact on the future of our economy and society as a whole.
It's up to us to shape that future.
That's a great note to end on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the Sugar Trust case. It's been a really enlightening journey exploring legal history and its impact on the world we live in.
It's been a pleasure.